Hello, I'm Llewellyn King, the host of White House Chronicle, which is coming right up. But first, I would like to acknowledge our sponsor for this program, Public Utilities Fortnightly, the well-established, 100 years in fact, utility industry magazine. It is running a very special conference to examine changes happening to electric utilities and to your electric supply. That special conference will take place in Phoenix, Arizona, on the 17th and 18th of November this year. To find out about it, go to PUF on the web, and you will be directed to the information you need. A few thoughts of my own, if I might. Everywhere I see pumpkins, pumpkins here, pumpkins there, it must be fall. It's pumpkin time. Little tiny pumpkins the size of your fist. And some so huge, you need a low loader, you know, a forklift device to lift them up. Two men can't do it. Some of them are so large. But we don't eat pumpkin in America. We make pumpkin pie at this time of year, but year round, you can't find a pumpkin as a vegetable or as a pie for looking. I think that's sad. Where I grew up in Central Africa, pumpkin was a very important vegetable. Everybody ate it. We ate it usually the same way you would eat a squash or a marrow, boiled and maybe mixed with a little sugar or something else to spice it up, or maybe just the way it was. Very popular vegetable, very edible, very good for you. But they have another use. Ah, yes, if I like pumpkin, and I do, it is nothing, I assure you, nothing compared to elephants. They love pumpkins. They play with them. They eat them. They throw them at each other. Go on YouTube. Look at elephants and pumpkins. They have a whale of a time. So think about elephants, the pachyderm, and the pumpkin. It's a great subject. I'm going to ask Linda Gasparello, the co-host of this program now, to introduce our very important guest for today. Linda.
Our guest today is Walter Callender. He's been on the show before. He's the founder and managing partner of C-Squared Strategy in New York City. Previously, Walter had served as managing director of global research for Bankers Trust in New York, and he has extensive experience in starting business and has co-founded Practico Innovation in Providence, Rhode Island, which is a private company that seeks to identify, discover, and invest in ingenious business ideas in minority communities, which can benefit from using science and technology solutions.
Absolutely. We're very excited to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Because of minority businesses and the whole business of being an entrepreneur. Who is an entrepreneur? What makes an entrepreneur? And once the entrepreneur has started the small business, how to keep it alive, how to grow it into something that is sustainable for many decades, that may grow to be a larger business, but also could just provide a very good living for its owners for a long, long time. A family business, in fact. What is the biggest obstacle entrepreneurs face?
That's a very good question. I mean, typically, we've found that most entrepreneurs, yours truly included, that the three C's, cash, customers, and company. So from that is that usually there's a tremendous amount, there's a tremendous demand to get capital to be able to invest into the business. That along in terms of actually building the company is actually finding the right resources, the people resources in general, to build the right kind of infrastructure so that you can not only develop your products and services, but that you can sell them effectively.
I have this feeling, Walter, that actually the entrepreneurism is, goes much deeper and is a much more primitive desire.
Yeah.
And that is people like my father, who never made much money, never had a big company, but always worked for himself because to him it was he was a mechanic.
Yes.
So he had a little contracting business. But it was an anathema to him to work for other people.
Yes.
He wasn't very good at it. He didn't know how to deal with authority. He was a very gentle man, but he couldn't handle the normal work situation. So whenever possible, whether it, usually it was working in his trade, which was, you know, building things, fixing pumps, all of that, even cars, buildings, wherever the work was, and sometimes he was so entrepreneurial he tried his hand at gold mining without much success. But the basic thing was, it was always the idea of doing something where you were self-employed. Mm. And that certainly has affected me, and I think that's a very big motivator. I read about universities, for example, offering courses in entrepreneurism, and I wonder if you don't need something deeper, a different desire, maybe not somehow this desire to be free and yet to make a living, and maybe to make a very good living.
Yeah. I mean, I think you raise a very good point in terms of the different types of entrepreneurs that one might meet. Mm-hmm. You know, and there is a popular belief today that entrepreneurism can actually be taught, versus is it an innate part of who you are and a desire to be free and to be creative? And I think if you look the landscape today, you find an interesting mix of people in terms of actually their motivations and their influences in terms of how they got there. But I'm not sure at the end of the day that one, in terms of where one begins and ultimately where one ends, that there is a definitive path to becoming
you
a successful entrepreneur.
You also need, usually in today's world, you need an idea.
Right.
Yes.
You need an idea, but you also need that access to capital to begin.
That's huge, yeah.
Now, you were a former banker at Bankers Trust, and from what I can see from a lot of commercial bankers, you know, the smaller entrepreneur is really up against a huge hurdle. Often the banks don't understand their idea, the business they want to get into. Bankers often understand one business very well when they're giving loans, like the real estate business, for instance.
Correct.
But if you give them an idea about a technology that you've got that you know would work, you know, you might be able to even export a product. They don't understand what you're talking, and they're afraid to take the risk.
That's
because
true.
Bankers are basically very risk averse. So in the capital, as we're trying to look at the entrepreneur, is the capital coming from their credit cards? Is it coming from their families? Is it coming from banks? Is it coming from the Small Business Administration where everybody thinks they're gonna get a lot of money?
Yeah.
If they've got a good idea, where's it coming from?
Very good question. All of the above.
All of the above.
I think
any one more than the other,
well,
depending on the situation?
You find in terms of kind of what dreams are people pursuing. So in certain dreams where there is a large capital requirement, let's say you're in manufacturing, so that there is a huge demand and a need for equipment, then you'll find that people will actually use very traditional sources. On the other end of the spectrum, you'll find people certainly in the software side of the business, that things, the cost of starting a business now is so low, but the cost that you can pay for data in a cloud, being able to contract out a sales management system through a Salesforce.com that you can do, a payment system that is easy to set up. So you can find in certain cases people will actually use family and friends, remains very popular. Credit cards is certainly very popular. The traditional path to both banks, credit unions, and certainly people doing SBA loans is still very popular. But a lot of in terms of where people go, the path they pursue for capital, is driven by both knowledge, the business that they're pursuing, and also the success that they've had. So in other words, if people have gone the traditional route and have not gotten the desired result in terms of the cash that they wanted, they've had to pursue other alternatives.
Let us come back to the disadvantaged getting into business,
yes,
which I'm keenly interested in, and I know you are.
Yes.
You can drive into any blighted area, and you can see entrepreneurism, not quite doomed, but not what we want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Nails, little nail shops, tattoo parlors, fast food of some kind. Mm-hmm. No, I don't mean the chains, but they're often there too. These very low end, which are fine, except they have no, there's nowhere to go.
Right.
Very occasionally,
right,
you get somebody in maybe in the nail business who can franchise it into something else, or somebody doing shoe shining as in a kiosk as a business. It's the next step that's so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you need the capital. That's where you need. And people are forced into these not very attractive pursuits or these very low threshold of entry, as you said, but basically low reward, because if the threshold of entry is low, needs must, competition is going to come right after you if you to be prospering.
That's true. That's true.
What do we say to an ambitious young, and let's speculate here, African American woman. I happen to know one in Washington. She has a hair business on weekends. She has a full-time job because she can't make the hair, doesn't have the confidence. How does she turn that into a prosperous salon? To do that, she'd need not just her skill with hair, which apparently is considerable, but she'd need equipment.
Real estate, which is a huge hurdle. Again, knowing how to deal with real estate. That's the thing that puts people out of business more than I think anything else.
Greedy landlords sign real estate contracts that are going to be greater than their revenues. I've had my own problems with real estate deals. Cost me a great deal of money when I sold a small business that I had. Linda, I want you to chime in here because you know something about the entrepreneurial life. well, I think you do, but your father was absolutely a classic entrepreneur who lived off a Rolodex. There were no cell phones, but the nearest phone.
That's right. Well, I think my father was one of those men who heeded the call of a relative when a relative needed him to step into the business. He was on his way to work after college in a big corporation, and for a lot of reasons had decided that this job that the relative had offered was the better way to go. Well, he became sort of the accidental entrepreneur, although I think that he would have been self-employed anyway, because that really is his personality. And his motto was, have telephone, we'll travel.
Right.
He was a meat broker. Most of his, almost his work was on the phone. He would hook clients up to each other. You know, it was a roller coaster of a business. Mm. It was like the Judy Garland song, you know, days will be cloudy or sunny, you're in or you're out of the money.
Right.
And he was both in and out of the money all the time.
You would like this, Walter. Mm-hmm. He would buy a railroad car load of beef in Chicago and started up towards Boston, selling it as it went.
If it got to Boston
and not enough had been sold, there would be some big bargains in the supermarket or a lot of dog food.
Yes, we know what little cha-cha was going to be eating. Yeah. It was going to be whatever my dad sold. But anyway, that was the accidental entrepreneur, but it turned out to fit his personality a lot. But it was a great struggle. And the one thing that my father had said was that he wished that later on in his life in the business, he did have two friends that he worked with very closely that were great mentors to him, that he really knew a lot more than he did. But he wished when he was much younger and just stepped into this, that he had been mentored. And I think, you know, when we talk about what you're trying to do with Practico Innovation and you know, with minority communities, you're mentoring these people who have good ideas, they've got ambition, they maybe have a little capital, but you know, they are going to hit these plateaus along the way, and they're going to need somebody to say, I'm going to tell you how to get over
this.
We're
going to take a little break for station identification, but when we come back, I want you to tell us about some of your success stories in mentoring. This is primarily for the benefit of our listeners on Sirius XM Radio, channel 124. You are listening to White House Chronicle with myself, Llewellyn King, Linda Gasparello of this program, and our special guest today, Walter Callender, who is a mentor to new businesses, particularly for minorities, but is himself a very accomplished and successful businessman in finance and in counseling. This program can be seen on 200 American television stations and around the world on the English language stations of the Voice of America. We're so glad you're with us. If you want to see older programs, you can do so or read some of our writing, some of the writing that Linda does and that I do. You can do that at whchronicle.com. That is our website, the website for this program. If your local station is interested, tell them to give us a call. We are not on every public television station, and we certainly would like to be. We are here, we hope, to make your lives more interesting, amusing, and productive. Walter, tell us about successes.
Well, Practical Innovation, which we've actually formed and founded as a private company in Rhode Island, and we were inspired to do so, is because we felt that many of these invisible and plain sight communities in the state were not getting the right level of attention in terms of their creativity and ingenuity. Why? Because we have seen historically first world companies go to South America, Central America, Africa, and Asia in search of new consumer behaviors that influence their thinking for new products and services. And given the concentration both of the immigrant population as well as the distribution of the communities of color in Rhode Island, it was the best petri dish that we could find to actually invest. So not only were we being mentors, and I have two other partners, but we're also being cheerleaders, but primarily we're also being investors. So we are looking for ingenious ideas.
Would you be interested in a good used television show?
We could find a role for that. So we use a showcase format where basically we give away cash prizes that focus on certain ideas that are kind of, aha, or I hadn't thought of that. It's funny how you'd mentioned the hair salon and being able to help perhaps the African-American woman you mentioned in Washington, D.C. We found a woman here in Rhode Island who, a Latin American woman, who wanted to open a hair salon. And we said, well, that's great. But what's unique? Is there a science and technology component? She had actually created a curling iron that used a certain amount of steam and how the steam was distributed through her iron that she could actually do more heads in an hour and thus in a day and be able to make more money. That was a practical innovation. That was something we were interested in. And the parallels are, did you know that Liquid Tide, famous, the ubiquitous liquid detergent in the world.
Yes.
The idea for that came out of Latin America as they watched the housewife drag 10 pounds worth of dry detergent home, difficult to lift. She gets it into the kitchen, and she stabs it with a knife just so she could just get some out to be able to get into the washing machine. 3 years later, Liquid Tide with an embedded measuring cup was born. Those are the kinds of practical ideas that we are trying to uncover, and we thought Rhode Island was a wonderful place to start.
I'm so glad you said that, because I often think, and I've given lectures on this, that the better idea is in front of you. It doesn't necessarily require a Harvard education or an MIT degree. The better idea is in front of you. Walkman was a better idea. Before that, radios were like this. People had these things that looked like Martians on their heads. The head of Sony, this is now old technology, but he thought, why don't we put it somewhere else and put something like this, a little wire up to the machine.
So I'm intrigued. Back to your innovator with the curling iron. Yeah. And by the way, if she has any samples she wants to give me, I'd be very happy to have them. But back to her. Now, she was a winner of one of your awards last year.
She was an idea entrant.
She was an idea entrant.
Unfortunately, she planted the seed of that idea, but I think that there was some dislocation in her family story that we've been unable to connect with her again.
Right. Give me another entrant who actually has prosecuted an idea and has been able to sell this product abroad. You talk about the markets, the Latin American market, there's the African American market, or Africa, exporters. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Asian Americans are, natural exporters.
Exactly.
So among your entrants, tell me who have you taken from sort of start to finish?
And it's still a work in progress. The company's only been around for 2 years.
Right.
We actually had five winners last year, and one of the best stories that we like to tell is with a company called Purifad, which actually started in Rhode Island with a father and son team mopping floors
right.
and office buildings. Well, they had determined that the world was changing, both with the new technologies to build LEED certified buildings and commercial structures, and also in terms of how air and heat would be distributed using underfloor air distribution instead of everything that you would see up top. So they actually built a robot that could, from 200 yards away, be remotely controlled to be able to clean these LEED certified and these UFED constructed buildings. We're happy to say that they've patented that robot. They signed their first client, a very large Boston-based mutual fund company, to a large six-figure contract within the past year.
May I ask what their education was?
The father and the son?
Yes.
We're not college educated.
I'm glad you asked that, because I don't think, I think college is very useful sometimes, but it's not a prerequisite to
That's
be a
right.
successful entrepreneur.
We agree.
Or more, don't let the fact you don't have one inhibit you.
Exactly.
I do not think this is a barrier that you cannot get through, a ceiling that you cannot break through.
Exactly.
It isn't necessary. And the people we're talking about largely don't have college
That's right.
education.
That's right.
But they will succeed if they think that they can do it.
Exactly.
I'd like to tell you a quick story about the hairdressing, and that is, everybody knows about the Vidal Sassoon. Mm-hmm. I mean, global beauty products. I watched Vidal being interviewed once, and the interviewer said, "Did you ever dream of going into another line of work?" He said, "I dreamt of nothing else, but I was a Jewish boy in London at a time when Jewish boys couldn't get into anything
That's
else
right. yeah.
except things like hairdressing."
Exactly.
And so the interviewer said, "Well, you're a billionaire now, doesn't that?" He said, "That doesn't alter the fact. It was wrong that I couldn't be in insurance."
Yep.
And that's a very beautiful illustration where people have been discriminated against mm-hmm. and overcome the discrimination mm-hmm. Grandly in mm-hmm. a superb way.
Yes.
Right.
And much creativity comes out of overcoming.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, we have found that if you just look at the numbers, that in the 21st century economy, we talked earlier before about access to capital. So certainly for science and technology-based businesses, a lot of that money is being raised privately or through alternative channels. Angel funds, private equity funds, venture capital funds.
Crowdfunding
is private. But the numbers, there's only 1-2% of the companies that are being founded are Black or Latino.
Really?
Okay. And a corresponding number of the same percentage of the funders, or the in terms of the people who are actually backing that. And largely because those institutions have a traditional infrastructure that has served them well. So what we are been attempting to do with Practical Innovation is to make imagery an important part of the conversation. The belief that if people see us, that they perhaps think that somebody like themselves, upon hearing that message, may be inspired to come forth with the idea. Because we find very well-intentioned people and institutions and organizations, bring me, you're tired, you're poor, but they're disappointed that when they look out in the audiences to these open contest and their call for action, that there's very little representation. And what we've recognized is that we think that who the messenger is just as important as the message.
You mentioned, and I think Linda also brought it up, the Small Business Administration.
Yes.
This is not, you know, God's gift to every entrepreneur.
Yes.
Because it's a long, slow process. You've got to qualify in various ways. You've got to have a certain kind of business. I learned at my own cost that publishing was not on the list.
You have to have a Sherpa. You have to have an SBA
at least.
Sherpa
so
to get
at least.
Anybody
the
starting, it's not a startup. It's something you've got to be going really to benefit from.
Yes.
To apply for financing.
Yes.
And then it's actually a bank loan, isn't it? But it's guaranteed by the government.
So
you don't get a check from the government.
No,
actually,
the government actually works with different financial agents in terms of the disbursement of monies. But you're right; it is it's oftentimes a loan at a competitive rate,
right,
with different set of terms based in terms of who the borrower is.
Well, I'm really interested in, you know, the undercapitalized. When you've got a good idea, at a certain point, you're ready to really hit the big time with it. You just don't have the money. Mm-hmm. And you still could not really prove to a bank that this is going to go somewhere.
Right.
Because you don't really have that skill, you know, you don't have that experience.
Yeah.
So you come in at that point too, and you will help your clients get through that point when they need actually to go for a lot more money, which is a really scary thing.
Exactly. So what we actually do is that through the showcases, we award a nominal amount of money to the winners.
Right.
And then we actually have created workshops in which we get a chance to really lean in and to understand their businesses, that it's all driven around this notion of business value. Have you created something that people need? And if they need it, will they pay for it? And then if they will pay, what will they pay? So by leaning in, we then start to learn more and more and be able to help folks shape the idea into a more formative concept business. And then we look at, either through some combination of ourselves as well as our network of investors, of the right kinds of introductions that would give them the access
and
to
the
capital.
Marketing. And who's doing the marketing at that point? Are they? This is another thing.
Yeah.
You've got no training in marketing either.
So we those are very good questions, Linda. What we do is, between ourselves, and there are a handful of partners that we utilize within Rhode Island that offer a wonderful training base for marketing, for finance, for product development.
Can you franchise this, make it universal so that you operate in Washington and New Orleans and Los Angeles?
We'd love to be able to do that. As soon as I discover that cloning pill that allows all three of us to be able to be in multiple places at the same time. But
this idea certainly deserves to be.
It is portable. It is portable. You're absolutely right.
Give us some other contestants, you know, that you've given the seed money to. You've got a whole new set of them. You've got your this is the second year of Practica.
This is the second year. That's correct.
So who are your latest awardees?
Last Wednesday, we had three primary winners. One was a gentleman who has created a proprietary insulation using cellulose fiber that is fire retardant, that is non-toxic, and is also animal retardant.
Is that patented?
It's not patented. He is in the process of actually applying for a patent.
Right.
And he uses recycled materials with no newsprint.
We're running out of time. What are the other two?
And the other two actually is a reinforced steel for bars and security in home and commercial structures that has blinds that are creative design blinds that can be interchanged. And the third is a mobile application for tour bus and municipal bus drivers that is technology used to record the data of their trips and destination.
That's our program for today. We'll be back next week. Please come along if you can. Cheers.